Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and today's topic is the Bath School disaster, and we're going to talk about that just in a moment, but before we do, let me introduce our panel. We're excited today because we have a special guest to our panel, but first let me introduce our regular panel back
special.
From doing God's work. Feeding the poor.
And she was under house arrest. She wasn't feeding the poor.
No, if you, Brandy, I know you probably didn't get to listen to our last podcast, but as I told our listeners,
I was worshiping Satan.
Did I use that term? I thought I said...
We told him you was down at the soup kitchen helping out.
Yeah.
No, that's not what you told him, but that's okay.
But welcome, Brandy.
I was none
welcome
of those
back.
Things.
We're glad you're back.
Thank you.
So they couldn't make the charges stick, so you're out now.
You don't worry about that.
Okay.
Plausible deniability.
But we missed you last time.
Mm-hmm. No, the listeners didn't and we didn't, but go ahead. Yeah, if it makes you feel better, go ahead.
Wow. I'm also joined, as always, by the very distinguished, honorable, and just all-around good guy. And a lot of people don't know this about you, Colonel, and I know you'd be embarrassed if I say this, but I'm gonna point out some of your good deeds. You know how Betty Ford was the voice?
Oh, for the love of all that's good and holy.
Became the face of...
Alcoholism?
Oh, yeah, like breast cancer is what I was thinking. But I guess she was the face of... Well, she was probably the breast of breast cancer. And the face
she was
of
the breast of breast cancer?
Yeah. And
okay.
And then Michael J. Fox is the face of whatever hell he has. MS or...
Parkinson's.
Yeah. Thank you.
MS.
They're the same thing.
Well, oh, sure. They're like that close.
The colonel here has become the face of...
erectile dysfunction?
Well, kind of. Premature ejaculation.
Sure.
And
it's horrible. It's a horrible thing.
Yeah, so Colonel, a lot of people don't know about the work you do with premature ejaculation, but I just want to say that you are the face of what I think of premature ejaculation.
Usually what I do, Timmy, is I
do you touch people's wieners? Because
I tell them to think about baseball or the devil. The devil right next to me here, because if that don't kill your boner and make you wait, nothing will.
That's a little hurtful coming from someone with an anchor tattoo.
I'm glad you're stepping forward and becoming the face of pre-ejaculation, premature.
No problem, Tim. And, I help out wherever I can.
But, you know, it's not a problem.
Well, not everybody can have the erection that lasts 4 hours.
It's actually a problem for women more than it is for guys.
Well, typically the women I've encountered,
think so.
Yeah, they and it really all depends, again, if they got the hot bone or not, Timmy. If they don't have the hot bone, you can just, it's like a oil drill. You can be, you're drilling a dry hole. But if they got the hot bone, you can make it go.
Really? That's what you're going with? Mm-hmm. You're an idiot.
My point was, they care about it more than guys do.
We actually don't.
Well, we're giving men.
Yeah.
We actually don't. We got shit to do.
And also joining... Oh, wait a minute. I got to go through your whole... What the hell is that? Your whole title, Colonel...
We already did that, Charles.
We already did that. Yeah. You got me covered well enough.
Walters,
let's get to our special guest, because we got some, questions for our...
Okay, we have a very special guest today, and it's Casey, and Casey is Brandy's brother. So, First of all, welcome, Casey, and we're sorry.
Hey, thank you for having me here. I am fantastic.
Casey,
why are you sorry?
Now that we got you here, we got some questions for you.
Shoot, go right ahead.
At what point did you... Now, your father is a policeman.
Yes.
Your mother sounds like a fire woman.
It reminds me of, you know,
we do a lot of serial killers.
Right.
And usually you find some dysfunction amongst the parents. But then with others, like Jeffrey Dahmer, had a lovely set of parents. Nothing was wrong with him. The devil here.
Yeah.
When did people start to know that there was something wrong with her?
Well, she's 6 years older than me. So I learned pretty quickly that she was the devil. Now, what happened in the first 6 years, I don't know. What you got to realize, though, too, Tim, is that you just see the one side of the devil. You just see the one side, the hateful, the negative. You just see that side. Now, there's a whole other side to the devil, and it's not much better.
So there's no good side over it, is what you're saying.
I've never seen it.
Okay.
So there's the dark side of the moon and a dark side.
There's a dark side and a darker side.
So I should have let people whoop your ass when you were a kid.
You whooped my ass plenty of times.
I know, because we're
on a daily basis. There was many times we had to call law enforcement on you.
No, we had law enforcement in the house.
As we mentioned that our father was, we had to call him many times. He's law enforcement.
I mean, did they take her for any kind of therapy? Was there any?
I think they just quit. I think they said we can't do nothing with her.
Did you ever wake up in the middle of the night with her standing over the top of you, just holding a knife and staring at you?
Well, I thought I did, but then when I turned the lights on, she disappeared.
That's happened to me.
Yeah,
Because you seem like you're normal and well adjusted. I can't imagine living with the devil.
Well, I had to leave. I had to leave really early and get away. I had to go south, and I don't know if you guys may not know, there's a river that separates Ohio and Kentucky.
And the devil doesn't like water. They don't like
water.
So
I went south because I felt it was safe.
Good thinking.
Yeah.
You know what? We should do our podcast.
That's why I live in Kentucky.
Yeah. You know what? I'm building a moat around my house.
I think that would be a good idea. What other questions do we have?
No, I just wanted to know.
Was there a lesbian phase?
Oh, yeah.
What?
She was a college softball player. Everybody knows that about the devil.
Yes.
How did your parents take learning she was a lesbian?
I don't think they ever found out.
They never found out?
Nobody did. Not even me.
I don't think they found out.
Boy, you had it really suppressed.
Yeah. Yeah, you suppressed it.
So suppressed.
And then after the lesbian phase, she got the brandy with the eye when she was working as a stripper.
Right.
And there's no shame in that. The colonel ain't judging.
She had to put herself through medical school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the tips there.
And I ended up here.
And a brass ass.
Good.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Kind of like Timmy in law school.
I just can't imagine going to sleep every night with the devil in the same house.
It was rough. It was rough. That's all I can say.
You must be a light sleeper.
I suppressed a lot of it.
You probably can't talk about it. Don't go to one of those people that want to.
I don't want to open up about it.
Right. You don't want to even know about it anymore.
Keep it buried.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Are we doing long distance dedications yet or anything?
He is, however. Now, we have learned about Casey that one dysfunction is caused. He is a hardcore Republican.
Yeah.
And we don't... The colonel don't judge. We don't say that's a dysfunction because...
You just did.
No, only for certain Republicans.
Oh.
Now,
be careful.
On the trail, me and Donald Trump have become good friends.
Yeah, I know.
And as you know, I've had some ongoing trouble with Ted Cruz. But that's what made me friends with Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen you on any of these debates. I don't see you on any
of
the polls.
Why ain't you on the stage with those fools? They ain't got nothing to say.
Well, how come you don't show up in any of the polls?
I don't need to be in the polls. Come election day, that's when you'll hear about me.
We're sitting on the bus.
Yeah. And we're getting ready to go, you know, through Iowa and whatnot. And Donald Trump, you know how he is. And he's like, hey, you don't like that, do you? And I was like, no, I don't like that. He's like, watch me get him going. So I'm like, all right. And he goes, hey, Ted.
that looks back. You know, he's all happy because Donald never talks to him. He's like, yeah. He's like, hey, Ted, you know what the difference between your mom and a blue whale is? He's like, what? No. Donald Trump says, ha, about 10 pounds. Ha, 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 ha. We thought that was a good one. Ted Cruz was madder than that, all the rest of the day.
Do your long distance dedication.
Yeah, yeah, okay, let's get into our shout outs here.
Yes, please.
Celine from Michigan.
Because that joke sucked.
I thought that was a good one. What's the difference between your mom and
yeah,
blue whale? 10 pounds.
Yeah. Okay.
Celine, I can't help myself now. That was a good one now. We used to use that one all the time in the second grade.
Yeah, well, that's a big one. Yeah, so shout out, please, Colonel.
Celine from Michigan. She was nice enough to send us in some subjects.
Waverly,
Michigan.
I think so.
Why don't you just let every stalker in the world hunt down Celine, all right? I'm trying to give her some anonymity.
She sent us a podcast topic suggestion that we're going to take a look at and see if we can do.
Yeah. If it involves any kind of research, it's just going to have to be me and Timmy. The devil won't be doing it. But
for sake.
So, Celine, we really appreciate that. So keep sending your suggestions in, and we will look at that podcast, see what we can do. We got another lovely lady from across the pond, Timmy.
You mean like... in England.
The Big Pond.
Yeah, the Big Pond.
It's Beverly. Beverly Oxford. She's from Lincoln.
Near Lincoln.
Yeah. And Beverly has a sheepdog that she sent a picture of in, and we cannot see it, but I'm sure it's a beautiful... Sheepdogs are just beautiful animals, named Sully. And she would like to do some research and do a podcast, and we really need... We need a British accent on here.
Yeah, like a real one.
Your half-assed one that you busted out earlier. Yeah.
I'm not sure what you mean.
That's
there,
the
Mike.
Side I was talking about.
Yeah, see, yeah. She ain't even nobody talking to you, though.
Doesn't matter.
So, Beverly, we would love to have you on our show. We could do it through Skype, through whatever. I'm sure there's lots of interesting things that go on in England. It rains all the damn time, I know. The food ain't no good over there. It's like Ireland. You know, Ireland and England like the same thing. I mean,
they're not.
No, I mean, go through. I want you to drive around, or next time, you know, in a hotel,
it's like
or you're looking
Canada
on
Canada
internet,
and the U.S.
Look
same.
For authentic so. English cuisine. Ain't nobody wants no English cuisine. Ain't nobody want to, and the Colonel's Irish, so this ain't an insult.
You know, you're insulting.
It's not an insult because you're Irish.
I'm just saying, ain't
you're
nobody
an
wants
to the Irish people.
Authentic Irish cuisine because they ain't got no potatoes over there. Yeah. You can only make potatoes 100 different ways before you get tired of them. England, they got the fish and chips. Now, those are good.
Yeah.
Those are good.
Okay, are you done insulting our list?
That was not an insult at all, Beverly. That was just a commentary that we can, I'm sure you can get pizza over there.
Beverly, thank you for your
Beverly,
comments.
Thank you very much.
And we're glad you're listening.
We will be in touch with you because we would love to have...
Do Jack the Ripper.
Oh, that would be an interesting one.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting one. Need to give a shout out to our new sponsor this week. It is Well Hung Drywall. So if you need something well hung, call Stu over at Well Hung Drywall. He will take care of you.
Because we're sure not calling you.
We might be calling you in about 3 years.
Well, you
you're
might
getting
be,
to that age.
But we're not calling you.
Okay, let's get to our...
So that's all right. Oh, and of course, as usual, the lovely
Dottie
Scott.
Oh, yeah, she wants to call. I told her she could call in one day.
Oh, we would love to have Dottie call in.
Yeah, I told her.
And Timmy, you're going to San Francisco here soon, right?
I am. I'm going to San Francisco this weekend. Any lovely ladies out there who would
this
like to...
This is not your personal dating show. Why do you keep doing that?
I keep waiting for someone to send me an email saying...
You keep on waiting.
You know, I try to think of this as like my Tinder, but...
Okay, but the question not. I got is when we're doing it, you know your mama listened to this show. Why you got to act like this?
She don't care.
Dottie, I know you raised
Players
got to
play.
Players got to play.
I know you raised the boy better, Dottie.
She wants to see me married and happy or married and miserable, one or the other.
She wants to see you married, not out slutting around like you normally do.
Wow, he said slut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's talk about the Bass School disaster. How about that?
Okay.
Okay. The Bass School disaster occurred in 1927 in Bath Township, Michigan. Maybe up near where Celine is from. In Michigan?
Maybe.
I don't know where Waverly is. But.
Well, Michigan, you know, is a tiny state.
Yeah. You have to put up your hand, you know, where you do the thumb thing.
Is that what it is? It's hotter balls in this room.
Okay, anyway.
Random thoughts.
Yeah, random thoughts.
Yeah.
The Bass School disaster is kind of a misnomer because, it was a disaster.
It was a disaster.
But it was really an actual mass murder is what it really was.
A massacre is what it was.
Yeah, a massacre. And it occurred on May 18th, 9 days after my birthday in 1927. I wasn't born then, but I was born on May 9th.
Close.
Yeah. May 18, 1927, in Bath Township, Michigan. The incident killed 38 elementary school children and 6 adults and injured at least 58 other people. It was the perpetrator, thank you.
Yeah.
Was Andrew Kehoe, who was...
I believe that's Kehoe.
It's Kehoe, whatever.
But let him say Kehoe all at once.
A 55-year-old psychopath, 55-year-old school board treasurer. You never want to piss off a school board treasurer.
No, anybody on the school board, they're typically wound tight.
I think it's just the math people.
Yeah, they have to, it's all that counting. Anyway, he got angry. He was angry over increased taxes. And he lost an election in the spring of 1926, so he decides to go and blow up the school. And, it was a pretty gruesome event. And to tell us a little bit more about Andrew Kehoe.
Kehoe. You know ho. You know that word.
I'm familiar.
You both should know it.
Well, he knows the word.
Okay, Brandy. Andrew
Okay.
Kehoe.
So Bath Township is a small community. It's located about 10 miles northeast of Lansing, Michigan.
How far from Waverly, Michigan?
85 miles.
Let's check that out.
Totally made that up.
Completely made that up. And it contains, Bath Township contains the unincorporated village of Bath. In the early 1920s, the area was primarily agricultural. In the early part of the 20th century, many small one-room schools with different grades shared the same classroom and teacher, and they were closed. Educators of the era believed that the children would receive a better and more complete education if students could attend a single school in one location.
I agree.
Well, because you care. The grades could be age-divided into classes, and the facilities could be of a higher quality. After years of debate, in 1922, Bath Township voters approved the creation of the Consolidated School District. It increased the property taxes to pay for the new school. When the school opened, it had 236 students enrolled in grades 1 through 12. All the landowners had to pay higher property taxes, and at the time of the bombing, the village had about 300 residents. Andrew Philip Kehoe was born in Tecumseh, Michigan on February 1st, 1872. His mother died when he was young, and his father married a much younger widow. Reportedly,
I know, you're all about that. Yeah.
Reportedly, Kehoe often quarreled with his stepmother, probably because they were sharing the same shit. What are you doing? When he was 14, the family's oil stove exploded and set his stepmother on fire. Stop, it's not funny. She was burned.
Why are you laughing at this woman caught on fire?
I'm laughing at him. I don't know what he's doing.
You got an oil stove and it catches the stepmother on fire.
He thinks Kehoe.
Terrible thing.
Kehoe.
Well, you don't know she was probably a bad woman.
She might have been a bad
woman.
No,
she wasn't.
Kehoe threw a bucket of water on her, but because the fire was oil-based, his actions spread the flames more rapidly over her body, and she died from her injuries. Word on the street was some of his neighbors believed that he caused the stove explosion.
That Kehoe did or his dad?
It's Kehoe. Okay. I don't know if that was old.
I know. I think
old Kehoe or young Kehoe.
Because that would be his modus operandi a little bit later.
It would be. Nice. Look at you. Is that what you got out of law school?
Yes.
Excellent.
He didn't pass the bar.
He did not pass the bar.
I did not take the fucking
probably because he had to know all that Latin. You didn't try.
Actually, he didn't need to know Latin, or I would have never even...
He studied electrical engineering at Michigan State College in East Lansing, and after that he moved to St. Louis, Missouri, where he worked as an electrician. After several years in Missouri, Kehoe returned to Michigan. At the age of 40, he married Ellen Nellie Price in 1912.
I like the name Nellie.
Nellie. Seven years later, they moved to a farm they had bought outside the village of Bath. Even though Kehoe was said to be dependable, doing favors and volunteering for work for his neighbors, they also described him as being impatient with all who disagreed with him.
Sounds familiar.
Sounds like Chuck. They recounted that Kehoe had shot and killed the neighbor's dog, also like Chuck, that had come on to his property and annoyed him by barking.
Well, a barking dog on your front lawn, I mean, it ain't worth shooting, but you could throw a rock at it or something.
Actually, Waverly is close to Lansing. You said it was close to Lansing, right? Bath. So this probably is...
from Michigan may know this.
Yeah, this area.
He was known to have beaten one of his horses to death when it did not perform as well as he wanted.
Did he keep beating it after it was dead?
I don't know, but you know.
There's no point in doing that.
Yeah, really, there's no point in beating a dead horse.
There's
but just think if Renee would beat you or kill you if after you can't perform. You can no longer perform. You'd been dead a long time ago.
Right.
Well, Renee been working a live horse for a while now, so. Yeah. Go ahead, go on. What you saying?
Renee needs to get her a new stud. You need to be sent to the glue factory is what needs to happen. With a reputation for frugality, Kehoe was elected in 1924 as a trustee for 3 years and the treasurer for 1 year on the school board, and he argued endlessly for lower taxes. The superintendent of the school board, M.W. Keyes, said that Kehoe was considered extremely difficult to work with, often voting against the rest of the board and wanting his own way.
Sounds familiar.
Chuck.
Mm-hmm. No, Kehoe he was like...
repeatedly accused the superintendent of financial mismanagement.
This could have been where the Tea Party originated. Well, lower taxes. He was mad.
Yeah, he had other
issues. School government was out of control. He wanted them fiscally responsible.
No, see, because then you don't blow up the school, because then you just create a whole other, you know, then you create more expenses.
Yeah.
You have to raise taxes to...
Well, I didn't say no. I didn't say they blew it up. I'm just saying maybe that's the idea germinated.
No, I'm saying his philosophy, he kind of went against that because...
Yeah, because it costs more money to build a new school. Of course, you get the insurance money.
Carry on, Brandy.
Thank you. He argued with the township financial authorities trying to get the valuation of his property reduced and claimed that he had paid too much for the farm. He also tried to get the mortgage taken off, but was not successful. How does that work exactly? Like, you just go in and say, yeah, I don't want to pay.
You just tear up the mortgage.
Is that what it is?
He paid $12,000 for the farm. He paid $6,000, I think, up front, and he's trying to get the other $6,000 forgiven or something.
Abated.
Right.
Abated. And he had...
how do you do that?
I don't know, but did you get a point? He was a little tight ass.
He was a
member of the, him and his wife was a member of the Catholic Church until he found out he had to pay dues.
So
he quit the church. Which is a good reason as any, I guess.
Right.
Well, I believe most churches would like, they don't have dues
tithe,
per se. But most churches do expect you to give a little bit of money to them if you're going to show up on Sunday. And
well, they're
going to
feed you, you're going to drink their wine and
drink
eat
the
their
wine,
crackers.
The crackers. My church, we're Methodist, we have the donuts.
I thought you were Catholic.
Catholic? What the hell did you get that idea?
I thought you were Catholic. That's where I did. I'm sorry. I was directing all those Pope jokes to you for no reason at all.
I was wondering why you kept looking at me when you was talking about the Pope. I don't care about the Pope.
In June of 1926, he was notified that the company was going to foreclose on his property. Kehoe was appointed in 1925 to temporarily fill the position of town clerk, but several months later he was defeated in the regular spring election. in 1926 for that position. The public rejection by his community angered him. In his eyewitness account, the Bath School disaster, Monty J. Ellsworth said he thought his rejection was the reason Kehoe had planned his murderous revenge of the bombings, to destroy the school and kill the community's children and many of its members.
It probably is pretty, you probably do feel rejected. You run for office and you lose.
Because you're a dick.
I'm just saying, it would, you know, he ran for office, he lost, he probably was, I mean, it probably does piss you off.
He's running for treasurer. Anyway, A. McMullen, another neighbor, noted that Kehoe had stopped working on his farm altogether for most of the preceding year and thought he might be planning suicide. For this reason, when Kehoe gave him one of his horses, the one he didn't beat to death, in April 1927, McMullen returned it. It was discovered later that, as part of Kehoe's preparations to destroy the farm, he had cut all his wire fences, girdling young shade trees to kill them, and cut off his grapevine plants before putting them back on their stumps to hide the damage. He gathered lumber and other material and put them in the tool shed, which he later exploded with an incendiary bomb.
Yeah, he was planning this for some time.
He was a hateful bastard, this guy.
I know. What did the plants ever do to him? And he's just doing all kinds of shit. He's just going to cut grapes for no reason.
He shot a dog, cut down the grapes.
Beat a horse.
Beat a horse. Beat a dead horse.
Probably. Let's see. By the time of the bombings, Nellie Kehoe had become chronically ill with tuberculosis, for which there was no effective treatment or cure. Her frequent hospital stays may have contributed to the family's debt. Kehoe had ceased making mortgage and homeowners insurance payments months earlier. There's no clear indication when Kehoe conceived and planned the steps leading to the ultimate events, but his neighbor, Mr. Ellsworth, thought that Kehoe conceived his plan after being defeated in early 1926 for the election as town clerk. The general consensus of the town people was that Kehoe had worked on this plan at least since August of the previous year. Kehoe had free access to the building during the summer vacation of 1926. From mid-1926, he began buying more than a ton of petrol, an incendiary explosive used by farmers during the era for
It's actually pyrrhotol.
Yeah, well, instead of buying pyrrhotol. Instead of buying pyrrhotol and dynamite, once you pay your damn mortgage, you wouldn't be in this spot.
And evidently, it was used a lot by farmers to burn stuff on the farm.
Yeah.
And for excavation.
Pyrrhotol is like a napalm. It's like a gel type thing.
Nasty.
You experienced napalm
back in Nam.
Well, back in the day, not Nam, places I cannot talk about right now. Mm-hmm. We have used pyrrhotol, we have used napalm, but it's a gel. It's a like a thick jelly like kerosene, and if you blow shit up with it, it flies everywhere. It's kind of like the hot oil.
He's Cliff Clavin.
Yeah,
that's why he knows this shit.
I ain't calling it petrol.
I can't. You know.
Petrol's a little different.
I'm not him.
That's true.
All right, let's see.
Perpetrator, how's that?
Yes, perpetrator would have been closer.
Thank you.
In November of 1926, he drove to Lansing and bought two boxes of dynamite at a sporting goods store. The dynamite was also commonly used on farms.
Why would they sell it at a sporting goods store? I mean, I would go to sporting goods.
That's where you got all the catchers.
That's how you fish.
I want to get a catcher's mitt.
And a couple sticks of dynamite.
And some dynamite.
Well, I guess you could get it at the hardware store, too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Hardware
store. Fireworks store.
And dynamite store.
Yeah, okay. Dynamite
I'm
store.
I'm almost done here. You can dynamite throw me this bone.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So, it didn't arouse suspicion because he was buying small amounts all over the place. And, of course, at the time, it wasn't like they could track it. Neighbors reported hearing explosions set off on the farm. One person even calling him the dynamite farmer. In December of 1926, according to the testimony of Michigan State Police investigator with the Department of Public Safety, Kehoe purchased a 30-caliber Winchester bolt-action rifle.
Well, that's a powerful rifle right there.
He probably got it at the sporting goods store.
With the dynamite.
Yeah.
Maybe they sell dynamite there for people who want to fish.
I said that 8 times. What the hell?
It's good for fish.
Nobody pays attention to it.
Right!
Yeah.
There's reasons for that.
I said fish.
Well, you also said Petro.
I did
you say said Petro.
I mispronounced one word. He can't hardly say his own name over there. Yeah. Calls him Keyhole when clearly there's no L.
He's drunk and on some kind of drug most of the time.
Yeah, but at least he's here.
Let's talk about the tragic events then, Colonel, that happened on this date in 1927.
Well, Mr. Keyhole, he had he put a lot of thought and a lot of planning into this. He was running back and forth to Lansing all the time to get explosives. He was running around town. People saw him everywhere. I mean, the guy was everywhere. And he also planned ahead. Now, this is how these people think. He bought a new set of tires for his truck because he didn't want to break down. He had loaded up all kinds of metal debris in the back of his truck so it would produce shrapnel for an explosion. And he didn't want to break down and have a flat tire and have somebody come up and help him and have a bunch of shrapnel and dynamite in his truck.
He
got new tires so he won't break down.
No, because that is poor
planning. And people saw him all over. And he used to do this late at night. A lot of times neighbors would see him late at night carrying stuff into the house. But, you know, he was kind of odd, a peculiar guy, so nobody really thought much of it. Plus, he wasn't blowing up stuff and shooting a dog, so they thought that was a good night for him just sneaking in the house.
Winning.
So, yeah. Now, on May 16th, this probably was setting him over the edge, my guess is. It's not the election. It's not the everything. Nellie, she got the consumption, right? She in the hospital.
Right.
And she gets discharged from the hospital on May 16th. And, you know, he blows everything up on May 18th.
Right.
So, you know, you...
So you think it's her being home that sent him over?
She came home bitching at him, I guarantee.
She did? Your house wasn't clean.
Well, he probably didn't clean the fucking house while she was
gone. There you go. There you go. See? That's what I'm talking about. Make you want to blow stuff up. Make you want to blow your own damn house up. And that's actually what the guy ended up doing. Before he did it,
he
beat her over the head with something.
Sure. Well, shovel, that's humane.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're pretty sure it was a shovel. Mm-hmm. It was a blunt object of some sort. Beat the hell out of the woman. Then threw her in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Took her back to the chicken coop.
Tuberculosis was no longer a problem.
Nope. No, he cured the TB. And
got that cleared right up.
Yeah.
An explosion will do
I got that. A shot when I was a kid, but she got beat over the head.
Yeah, so anyway. He puts her in a wheelbarrow and...
Yeah, he takes her back to the chicken coop. And now he put all over the house some pyrotol firebombs and all the buildings on the farm. And he blew up the farm. That's what he did. And he burned his two horses, who were tied in their enclosure with their legs wired together. So they couldn't be rescued during the fire.
What is his beef with horses?
That's just sick.
He's got a dead wife, and his house just blew up. Okay?
And I'll guarantee you there'll be more people upset for these two horses than when all these other people we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah, and this is... The timeline's a little odd here, because I'm not really getting the timeline, because they got... They knew it happened between this window. They knew he blew it up before the school.
Right.
But it was fairly early in the morning. It was very close to the time he blew up the school. So now you got all these rescuers that are coming, rushing to his house.
Yeah, and he's just like driving off, right?
Right. Yeah, he just drove away. He was later, like, bitches. Oh, fuck this shit blowing up on me. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, didn't he see a couple, like, guys he knew that he was like,
well, we will get to that. Right.
Yeah, why do you do that?
Jumping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
I want to make sure.
It's like he wants to take everybody's thunder.
No, well, I'm not really sure why you give me the part if you're going to just read
That's
it yourself.
What I'm saying.
I
mean, he if you just take everybody's thunder.
I want to make sure you get all of the story. Go ahead.
So anyway, there's a fireman. It's O.H. Bush, and he was the great great grandpappy.
Do not lie.
George Bush.
That's a lie.
He was a fireman. He crawled through the window, broke.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Window and looking for survivors in the farmhouse. And they determined nobody was in the farmhouse, so they salvaged the furniture. I'm not really sure why they did that, but before the fire could spread into the living room, because this time they think it's an accident.
Right. And they don't know that they don't know if there's anyone in there.
But Kehoe is leaving the house. Now, he ain't even trying to put out the fire. He's leaving. He's letting, you know, George Bush's grandpappy claw him through the window.
That's true. It wasn't George Bush's grandpappy. But did they...
Do you know it wasn't his last name, Bush? He could have been a cousin. Could have been anything. No,
we're not saying it was his grandpappy. We're just saying
what type of furniture did they save?
An armoire? It was Victorian. Yeah. It was a chaise. Oh, did he like to sit on?
Chaise.
Yeah. So anyway, Kehoe, he's getting ready to leave the house. He got his Ford truck there, and he stops and tells
Ford
these guys.
Truck?
Yeah. Well, if you're going to blow something up, you need a Ford truck.
Sure, obviously.
Okay. So he says, boys, you're my friends. You better get out of here. Head down to the school. Now, they don't even know what the hell he's talking about. Now, at school, the classes, they start at 8:30. Now, at 8:45 in the basement of the north wing of the school.
I think it's AM, too.
An alarm. Now, this gets complicated here, so don't interrupt because people ain't going to be able to follow.
Okay. No, you're talking is why people won't be able
classes
to follow.
Classes start at 8:30, okay? About 15 minutes. Classes start at 0830.
Okay.
Central time.
At about 8:45 in the basement of the north wing of the school, an alarm clock set by Kehoe detonated the dynamite and the petrol. Pyrotol that he had hidden there. Now remember, throughout the summer, he had access to this whole school building, so he had this all set up. So the rescuers took off from Kehoe's farm and headed toward the explosion at the school building.
Yeah, apparently you could hear it from miles away.
Oh, yeah. Parents said that parents began rushing to the school. The school building, it basically turned into a war zone. As you said, 38 people, mostly children, were killed in that initial explosion. And a first-hand account here is Bernice Sterling. She's a first-grade teacher.
Bernice,
yeah. And, you know, first-grade teachers back in those days, we went through, you know...
Right.
She had to be single. She couldn't get ice cream and stuff like that.
Because it was scandalous.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, her direct quote here is, "It seemed like the floor went up several feet. After the first shock, I thought for a moment I was blind. When it came, the air seemed to be full of children and flying desks and books. Children were tossed high in the air. Some were catapulted out of the building." So now the north wing, remember this under the north wing of the school. The north wing collapses. Parts of the wall crumble, and the roof falls to the ground. Now, Monty Ellsworth, he's the guy you talked about there.
Sure.
He said there was and this is where it gets kind of gruesome, so I'll give you listeners a chance to turn this off just for a minute. There was a pile of children about five or six under the roof. Some of them had the arms sticking out, some had legs, and some just had the head sticking out. They were unrecognizable because they were covered with dust, plaster, and blood. There was not enough of us to move the roof. Now, this is Ellsworth. He was a first-hand witness. Yeah. Uh-huh. So he decides to run back to his farm to get a rope heavy enough to pull the roof off of these children's body. Now, returning to his farm, he sees Kehoe in the opposite direction heading toward the school. Now, remember, these bombs went off remotely. So, right. You know, they were set by an alarm clock. Kehoe's headed to the school to see what kind of damage. I mean, he's a sick-some bitch right here. So Kehoe, now remember, Ellsworth's going back to his house. He passes Kehoe headed toward the school. Kehoe just gives him a big smile, waves, and Ellsworth said, I could see, he was smiled so big, I could see both rows of his teeth. Now, you can imagine the scene at school, that's just chaos. And Robert Gates, he was a witness to this, and he said, mother after mother came running into the schoolyard and demanded information about a child. And on seeing the lifeless forms laying on the lawn, sobbed and swooned. In no time, more than 100 men were at work tearing away the debris at school, and nearly as many women were frantically pawing through the timber and broken bricks for traces of the children. So, this is going on, you know, they don't have heavy equipment or anything at the scene. They're doing this all by hands, buckets, whatever, you know, they're trying to... Doesn't look like there was a big fire, just an explosion. So, about a half an hour after the explosion, Kehoe drives up in his truck. And he sees the superintendent of the schools, and he calls him over. Now, Charlie Hawson, he's a guy, he testified at the inquest that they saw the two men struggle over some type of rifle. Probably that gun you were talking about, the Winchester. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden, a car went up in an explosion. Now, it killed Huck, who was the superintendent he was arguing with. It killed Kehoe. Killed Nelson McFerrin. He was a retired farmer. And this poor little kid, Cleo Clayton, he survived the initial blast. He was an 8-year-old second grader. He survived the initial blast, but he was killed by shrapnel that Kehoe had laid, you know, loaded up in his truck there. And it also killed the postmaster, Glenn Smith. He lost a leg and died later on. So anyway, Ellsworth, you know, again, he's talking about the truck explosion. He said, I saw one mother, Miss Eugene Hart, sitting on the bank a short distance from the school with a little dead girl on each side of her, holding a boy, Perry, who died a short time later after they got him to the hospital. Or, I'm sorry, Percy. And this was about the time Keo blew his car up in the street, severely wounding Mrs. Hart's son, Perry, the oldest child she had. Now, Butch's grandpappy here, he was the foreman of the road crew. He recalled the scene of the final explosion. He said, I began to feel as the world was coming to an end. I guess I was a bit hazy. Anyway, the next thing I remember, I was out on the street. One of our men was binding up the wounds of Glenn Smith. He was the postmaster there. And his leg had been blown off. I went back to the building and helped with the rescue work until we were ordered to stop while search was made for more dynamite. So that's really what you had at school. The guy just blew the hell out of everything. This building couldn't have been that big. The north wind, just, I mean, you got dynamite.
Yeah, every
you got
kid in the, you know, probably every kid in the area was there.
Well, there was 112 in the school, right? There was 112 in the school, 38's killed right there. So you got...
Yeah, and then, you know, it was timed, like you said, at 8:30. It kind of reminds me of the 9/11 attack. Well, so, like, it was about the same time, like, right
when
people
were
arriving.
Yeah, he had planned it right as they were, you know, right as they were getting there, they get settled in. And when you think, I mean, think about this. We went on, you know, we talk about the worst possible things or Virginia Tech. You know, and I believe there were only 33 people killed Virginia Tech, including the shooter. So you got this is worse than that, you know. And these kids didn't even have a chance.
This was the worst mass killing of, and you know, when we did the Pearl shooting, school shooting podcast, we went down through a history of all the school shootings, which they, you know, goes back to the beginning of the country.
Yeah,
when the country was founded. But this was the worst mass killing in any school in the history of the United States.
And again, we're going back to, what is the year, Timmy?
1927,
yeah.
So, you know, violence in schools is not a new thing. I mean, it's something that's been going on forever.
But this guy was just... I mean,
he took it to another level.
Yeah,
he took it to another level, but he...
You don't really hear about him. I mean, you know what I mean? You don't really hear a lot about him like you do some of the other nut jobs that we talk, you know, that we've talked
about. No, until this got brought up, I have very little knowledge of this, and as you can tell from what the devil just said here, she had no and still has no knowledge of it, but...
even after the podcast.
Even after the podcast, she hasn't learned anything.
Right. I only have so much room there, Cliff. I can't hang on to everything.
But, now, what happened after that, we're gonna let Casey inform us here and tell us what happened after that.
Well, first of all, I was going to go over the response, the rescue.
First of all.
Well, okay. Then you go ahead and do a response and rescue there, Timmy.
Thank you. So it was chaos. And chaos. It was like a war zone. Telephone operators stayed at their stations for hours to summon, you know, this is back when you had telephone operators plugging in calls, summoning doctors, undertakers in hospitals, and anyone who might be able to help. The Lansing Fire Department sent several firefighters and its chief. It was a local physician, a DJ, J.A. Crum, and his wife, who was a nurse. They both had served in World War I, and they had a pharmacy there in Bath or outside of Bath. And they used that as a triage center, the pharmacy as a triage center, and then later on... the bodies were taken to, the dead bodies were taken to town hall, and it was used as a morgue. You know, hundreds of people worked in the wreckage all day and into the night to find survivors. Eventually, 34 firefighters and the chief of Lansing Fire Department arrived on the scene, as did the Michigan State Police. Who kind of managed to traffic around the scene. It was just, as you can imagine, it was just chaotic with the debris and the injured dying, and then the parents who were trying to find out whether or not, you know, their kids survived or not. The interesting, they were taken to two hospitals. One was the Sparrow Hospital and one was the St. Lawrence Hospital. And interesting enough, the St. Lawrence Hospital was actually financed by Lawrence Price, who was the uncle of Nellie Keyhole. Michigan Governor Fred W. Green arrived in the afternoon, and he assisted in the relief work, carting away bricks from the scene. The local Lawrence Baking Company sent food to serve the rescuers. The bombing had destroyed the north wing of the school, and during the search, they found an additional 500 pounds of dynamite in the south wing that had failed to detonate. So this thing could have been
been everybody.
Yeah, so this guy had planned on, you know, leaving, blowing this school just completely down. So they had to stop the rescue so that the Michigan State Police could go in and disarm the devices. And they found an alarm clock with the dynamite that was set for 8:45 a.m.
So he planned on them both going off at the same time.
Basically, the first one went off at 8:30?
No, the first one went off at 8:45. Okay. School started at 8:30.
Okay, so they were both planned to go off at the same time. Now, what they think happened is the initial explosion caused a short circuit in the second set of bombs that ended up preventing it from detonating. But
what happens now?
It could have been the match.
Well, bombings is typically what they do is they give it 20 minutes between bombings.
Yeah, so you get the first responders
or whatever, and then they blow up the second thing.
So then the police and fire gathered at Kehoe's farm to investigate, you know, see what was going on there. State troopers had been searching for Nellie throughout Michigan because they thought she was in a tuberculosis TB. Sanitarium, but they found her charred body the following day in the ruins of the farm. Like you said, Colonel, they had put her in a wheelbarrow after he had bashed her over the head.
Well, she probably wasn't a small woman.
I don't know how tall or big she was, but
you ever seen
what the hell does that have to do?
Well, have you ever seen a small Nellie? That's all I'm saying.
Oh, my God.
It was in a small Nelly.
The man's got a point.
The Nelly on Little House on the Prairie wasn't a big girl.
I mean, he's right.
Yeah. That was a fake Nelly. That wasn't a real Nelly.
How many Nellies do you know?
What do you think?
Any Nellies?
No, okay, have you heard
other
that expression?
Other than to say, whoa, Nelly.
Let me ask you this. Whoa, Nelly.
Yeah, other than to say, whoa, Nelly.
That's what I mean.
Have you ever heard, do you know a Nelly?
What else do you say whoa to?
Do you have you ever heard of another Nelly?
What else do you, Casey, what else do you say whoa to?
Do you know
another
Nelly?
Large objects.
A large animal.
Large objects.
Like a horse. Whoa, Nelly.
Speaking of horses, they found.
Speaking of horses, you're a jackass.
They had found, you know, in the farm, that farm building was destroyed, and the two horses were trapped inside the barn and had died, of course. And as the colonel said, their legs were wired, so they couldn't get free. A sick bastard. Anyway, investigators found a wooden sign wired to the farm's fence with Kehoe's last message that read, "Criminals are made, not born."
If you get on the internet and Google that, you can see the sign.
Yeah, you can see the
sign
on
there.
So now Casey's going to talk about the aftermath of all this.
Are you sure you're going to let him?
Yeah,
you're all
kind of
mean.
You're the one kind
of... Hey, just sit over there and play Candy Crush.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Don't interrupt the boy and he'll be fine.
You shut up.
So the day of the bombing, after everything kind of, if you could say, calmed down, the coroner arrived on the scene, they swore in six community leaders to serve as jury to investigate what had happened. The investigation really kind of centered around a couple of different things. The biggest thing that it centered around was the death of the superintendent, and it also centered around whether or not Kehoe had help within the school, anybody in the school. There were over 50 people that testified. I'm not going to go over what everything that they said. One of the things that I found interesting was there was a little bit of a contradiction between witnesses as to what happened when Kehoe pulled up to the truck, or pulled up to the school and blew his truck up. There was three telephone linemen working near the school that testified that Kehoe had passed them, and they saw him arrive. They said he immediately swerved his truck in front of the building and blew it up instantly. Other witnesses testified, however, Kehoe passed, after he passed the lineman, that he found the superintendent, called him over to the truck before blowing the truck up, and I think that's pretty much the consensus as to what had happened. So after a week, they determined that he had acted completely on his own. Everybody was exonerated during the investigation, so they found out that he had done and planned this all by himself.
He's a lone wolf.
He was a lone wolf. That day, there was you had 43 people in total that were killed, along with himself, which brings the total up to 45, 38 children. A month after the final victim, fourth grader Beatrice Gibbs, died following complications from a hip surgery. That brought the total up to 45, and as we mentioned, that is still the largest school tragic school incident in our history. The media really took interest into this. They flew in. There was reports of planes landing on people's farms, and really kind of stirred thing up, made it a circus. It only lasted 3 days, however. Charles Lindbergh took off for Paris 3 days after the bombing, so the media kind of left really quickly. However, it became a very, locally, people wanted to go see what had happened, and there was an estimated 50,000 cars that showed up the next weekend to see what had happened. So in a town of 300 people or so, you've got 50,000 cars showing up the next weekend. You can imagine that
would
be a mess.
Grotesque to go see something like that.
Sounds like something you
soon.
Would do.
That
like
soon,
something you would
not
do.
That
yeah.
soon after that.
You're sick.
Thank you.
There's
consensus.
Yeah.
There's a consensus
wow.
there.
So the next school, next school year started in September. They didn't waste much time. Schools were held the next year in community halls, township halls. A couple retail establishments were used. The board approved a new superintendent And one architect in particular from Lansing, Warren Holmes, donated construction plans to rebuild the wing of the school that had been destroyed. And a Michigan Republican senator, James J. Cousins, donated $75,000 of his own money to rebuild the school. And in 1928, that new wing was opened up as the James Cousins Architectural School. And the Kehoe Farm was plowed under soon after to make sure that there was no explosives hidden on the property. And that property was shortly after as well sold at auction to pay off Kehoe's debts. In 1975, the school was demolished completely, and it was developed as a park. At the center of the park, there is a cupola which still stands. It was an original cupola on the property of the school.
What's a cupola?
A cupola. Like a little, it says cupola.
I don't know what a cupola is.
You don't cupola. Know what a cupola.
It's a little round thing you sit out and you talk about and read.
It's like a talk amongst yourselves.
You talk amongst yourselves. Like a coffee talk.
Like a gazebo.
There you go. Yeah. Different word.
I just asked.
It remains in the park. In 1991, a hysterical marker or historical marker was installed at the park.
A hysterical marker?
A hysterical marker.
Some lady just stood there and screamed.
That's what I like to
call it. Well, if one of your children was in there, when you put the marker up, you'd be hysterical about it.
They're all dead.
Kehoe's remains were buried in an unmarked grave in Mount Rest Cemetery. His wife was buried in a separate cemetery under her maiden name.
I don't really blame her for that. Family said, okay, we're going to... take her remains.
This was a horrible.
Yeah, this is really upbeat story.
It's really hard when you're talking about kids getting killed, because you can sometimes you get into serial killers and they can amuse you.
Yeah,
you know, and
it's hard to make jokes when you're talking about
kids. Although now I found this one funny, and I was Casey. You mentioned that the Republican from Michigan.
Yes.
I don't know how much you followed in this. I don't get to watch it as much as I'd like to, but. Did you see the two Republican, and it's always funny, this is always funny to me, when there's a big scandal, if it's Republicans, it's always sex. If it's Democrats, it's money.
Right.
And Democrats, they're always talking about materialism and this and that.
Well, my wife always says it's about sex with me, so.
Hey, you're a Republican.
There you go.
So your scandal's going to be about sex.
Guaranteed.
Did you see the two legislators up in the two state representatives up in Michigan that got one resigned, one got expelled because they was
having
an affair. They're both married, very. They both ran on the family value things,
little hypocritical.
Yeah. They were
blatantly obvious in front of everybody.
Where were they doing it?
In the state house, in their offices.
Classy broads.
Yeah. Yeah. And she would bring blankets.
Is this the one where they created the fake story?
The guy created a fake story about hooking up with a male prostitute just to throw people off. He sent out fake emails.
He'd rather have it out that he hooked up with a male prostitute.
And then they found out
insulating. If he's so far out there, so ridiculous. That if someone then come along and say, no, he's actually, I didn't know it was another legislator. I just read part of it.
And then they found out that during the election, before the election, he sent out fake emails accusing himself of being a child molester.
Oh, my God.
So he could come out and be indignant about it, and people would feel sorry for him being falsely accused of being a child molester.
Well, he was falsely accused.
Well, he was falsely
by
accused.
Himself.
By himself. But that made me think of that. Is it when you said the Republican from Michigan?
It takes all types, doesn't it?
Have you ever noticed that pattern? I always say if it's going to involve money, if you see a scandal coming up and it's like,
sex
a congressman
scandal.
Today was indicted for, you know, accepting large bribes. It's a damn near always a Democrat.
Because
they're always talking about how, you know, you don't materialize. And Republicans always talking about family values. And it's what you repress that you just cannot.
Like the extended family.
Yeah, no, but it's whatever you're trying to repress.
Man,
your materialistic side or your family, your sexual side. It just gets the best of you sooner or later.
Well, you need to, when you're out on the campaign trail, why don't you bring that up?
Well, I have.
He's on the campaign trail.
You know what? I've been off the campaign trail a little bit because they, now that they're
doing
these debates.
They spit on you?
I don't want to.
I want to tell all the people out there that meet him on the campaign trail that today has changed my life.
Thank you.
Came in here today with some life pondering questions, and after 30 minutes of sitting with the colonel, my life has changed. You only charged me $29.99 for that.
I think plus tax.
People need to go up. Whatever they think about the colonel is true. They need to see the man on the campaign trail.
And he's white. Yeah. Can you confirm that he's white?
I cannot confirm or deny what I'm saying right now.
Everyone always thinks he's black.
In case I gotta ask you, you got a fairly strong Southern accent there.
Yeah.
What part?
Actually, it's a good radio voice.
I live in Lexington, Kentucky. I had to get out early from the devil. So.
Well, I don't blame you. I've lived down there a long time. You put a lot of miles between yourself and the devil.
I lived down there a long time.
But you can tell you get and I've found this is you get down in certain parts, and Lexington's one. Louisville's another one.
God's country. We've just pushed Louisville over.
Yeah,
we don't really care for Louisville.
No, but they got the same accents as people from North Carolina.
You do understand you don't know shit from apple butter, right?
I do know this because my stepfather, who had the consumption, spent 18 months in a sanitarium. He's from Oneida, Tennessee,
yes,
and it's very hard to distinguish his accent from a Kentucky accent because it's on the border.
Yeah.
But when you get into eastern Kentucky, you get much more of an Appalachian accent.
Yeah. Yes.
Accents in Kentucky differ. Kentucky's not a big state, but you can tell where somebody's from in Kentucky by their accent.
I don't know, Casey, if you found this to be true or not, but I'm from Portsmouth.
Well, we know that because you can't read.
All right. But it's like Cincinnati. It's right on the river, and across the river is Kentucky. There's a tremendous difference in accents from one side of the river to the other.
It's because we keep the devils above the river.
It's not good or bad. I just mean you can really... I'm not sure if someone from outside of there can know the difference, but if you're from that area...
Which is funny, because down through that area, everybody's Appalachian. Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, right. Chillicothe,
and related.
Across the...
They're all related.
No, that's West Virginia.
My bad.
Please don't insult West Virginia. Say something nice about Beverly since you screwed that up earlier.
Beverly, I did not mean to say anything. All I was saying was, Beverly, we're making a nice meal over here because the one thing that England lacks is nice weather. Nice weather.
Say something nice.
Well, she got a sheepdog for the love of God. She don't need me. She gets love from this dog. But Beverly...
She's got to be a great woman if she has a sheepdog. At least she's a dog person,
she listens
not a cat
to us.
Person.
I mean, she left us a message. She's a fine, fine woman. And we... You know, Britain has always been a place that the colonel has always had so much admiration. Because you go back to World War II.
Yeah.
You know, of course, we saved everybody and we fixed everything and we did it, whatever. But,
Jesus.
These poor bastards had to fight off the Germans by themselves for, 19 years before we ever decided to help them. Okay, not 19 years, I'm exaggerating it. But, think about that. There's a little island over there. Now, Germany has conquered all of Europe, but they can't beat England. I mean, the English people, you can knock them down, you can run them over, you can do whatever, but you can't beat them. You just can't beat them down.
I just simply said, say something nice about Beverly, and he's gone on about...
Oh, my God.
The Blitz. I don't know where he's going.
Well, I'm just saying, if she's from Britain, she's from good stock.
And she has a stiff upper lip.
She has a stiff upper lip, yeah.
Okay, and where can people find us?
Well, people can find me in my office.
No, that is not true.
That's not true at all.
People can find me. People are going to find me and Casey down at the bar because we're about tired of you two. Casey ain't getting paid for this. Casey came in of his own accord, drove an hour and a half to get up here.
Yeah, quit implying that we're getting paid. We're not getting paid for this.
You're getting paid from Well-Hung Drywall.
Well-Hung Drywall, they wrote us a check.
If I'd have wrote you a check.
Well, they wrote me a check. You guys ain't getting paid. You go out and get your own sponsors. But
Where can people find us?
People can find us on Facebook at History Dweebs. People can find us on Stitcher, but you can't really find anything on Stitcher.
You can't. People listen to us.
Yeah, people, you can find us on LipSync or LipSync or whatever. But if you go to the iTunes, If you go to the iTunes and
that's on the World Wide Web.
On the World Wide Web, you got to download a program first, and it takes a little while. If you got the dial up, it'll take you a long time.
The dial up.
But anyway,
the AOL.
Get the AOL. So you download the iTunes, and then you put in search history.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Please go to iTunes and leave us.
No,
us a comment.
This gets complicated.
Oh my God!
You go to the iTunes now. When you see all of our things, all of our shows there, and we've got about 150 of them now.
Or 50.
About 50.
We got 50 shows.
Yeah.
That's 50 hours I spend with you two.
51, 50.
People wonder. My doctor asked me the other day. He's like, "The Colonel, your blood pressure up. Your hair getting gray. What's the deal?" I was like, "The damn podcast."
Did you talk to him about your premature ejaculation?
If you just click on our icon, it'll say, if you click on one of the articles or one of the podcasts, it says reviews. We would love to have a review from you.
Maybe not of this particular podcast.
Of any particular podcast, because you're going to have,
we have better days and then...
And please, for the love of God, say something nice about these two, because you can see the hate coming from them. Because everybody says something nice about the Colonel. Why wouldn't they? I mean, puppies love me. Women love me. Old ladies love me. Old people love me.
And people suffering from premature ejaculation love you.
Well, you're their spokesman.
I am
their
spokesman.
You're the face of premature ejaculation.
Yes, and you know...
All in your face.
I don't know what your fascination is and why you're stuck on this premature ejaculation.
I just think it's a very admirable thing that you're doing, stepping forward to come, because you know a lot of people would be ashamed.
but not you.
You know, the Colonel look at it like a horse
you
race.
The first one to cross the finish line wins.
That's what I tell the little wife. It's like the Kentucky Derby. If I cross the finish line first, I win.
Hey, you got yours.
What
do you care?
That's right. So, Colonel ain't got time. Colonel, busy man. What do you think? I got 45 minutes all day. I got to knock this out in like 3-4 minutes. I ain't got all day for this.
That's all you got.
Right. Yeah.
You got podcasts.
I got podcasts to do. I got people to see. I got autographs to sign. I got, as a matter
so
of
really,
fact.
Really, your ejaculation is immature.
No, they're not immature. They're mature ejaculations. Mine are timed down to the last second. They're almost, actually, if you go look at my Outlook calendar right now, you can see from 4 to 4.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Be ejaculated.
Thank you.
Casey, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for
having
me.
Casey, it's been lovely to have you
up here. And you're welcome back anytime.
Yeah, we hope to have you back soon. Actually,
tomorrow, if you want.
We can make this a three-person podcast.
Yeah.
Just saying. You can't always make it with your soccer coaching or whatnot.
Devil worshipping.
Being in jail.
Drinking.
Drinking.
Stripping.
Yeah. Stripping.
Lesbianism.
Lesbian.
Yeah, what about that lesbian phase?
We need to sign off. I think we're going on an hour and 20 minutes. And only a little bit was on the actual topic.
Oh, yeah. We probably really should work today.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you. And join us again next time for History Dweebs.
Thank you, folks.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.